The Pastoral Epistle of 1 Timothy in a Nutshell by Bart D. Ehrman, read by John Paul Middlesworth. In this series providing summaries of each book of the New Testament in a nutshell, I have dealt with three of the letters that claim to be written by Paul but probably were not: Colossians, Ephesians, and 2 Thessalonians. We now come to the three letters that are grouped together and called the Pastoral Epistles: 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. For reasons we will see, there is a wide scholarly consensus that these books were not actually written by Paul. Before addressing the issue of authorship, I'd like to note the ostensible distinctive themes and emphases of these books, both as a group, since most scholars are reasonably certain that they all came from the same pen, and individually. The three letters are grouped together as pastoral epistles because each claims to be written by Paul to a person he has appointed to lead one of his churches. Timothy, his young companion left to minister among the Christians in Ephesus, and Titus, his companion left on the island of Crete. Moreover, these epistles contain pastoral advice, that is, advice from the apostle to his appointed representatives concerning how they should tend their Christian flocks. Each of the books presupposes a slightly different situation, but the overarching issues are the same. The problems involve A, false teachers who are creating problems for the congregations, and B, the internal organization of the communities and their leaders. Quote-unquote, Paul urges his representatives to take charge, to run a tight ship, to keep everyone in line, and above all, to silence those who promote ideas that are in conflict with the teachings that he himself has endorsed. In this post, I deal with 1 Timothy. I begin by giving a one-sentence, 50-word description. The first pastoral epistle, 1 Timothy, allegedly by Paul to his protege Timothy, whom he appointed leader of the church in Ephesus, provides instructions for repressing false teachings, appointing properly qualified church leaders, and keeping good order in the church, especially among widows and women who are wrongfully asserting authority. Here is how I elucidate the major emphases of 1 Timothy in my textbook on the New Testament, edited for this occasion. 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy presupposes that Paul and Timothy visited Ephesus on the way to Macedonia, chapter 1, verse 3, and that Paul decided to leave Timothy behind to bring the false teachers under control, 1, 3-11, to bring order to the church, 2, 1-15, and to appoint moral and upright leaders to keep things running smoothly, 3, 1-13. Most of the letter consists of instructions concerning Christian living and social interaction. For instance, on how Christians ought to pray, how they ought to behave toward the elderly, widows, and their leaders, and what things they ought to avoid, namely, pointlessly ascetic lifestyles, material wealth, and heretics who corrupt the truth. The nature of the false teaching that the author disparages is somewhat difficult to discern. Some members of the congregation have evidently become enthralled with, quote, myths and endless genealogies, unquote, 1 Timothy 1:4. This phrase has struck a chord with modern interpreters familiar with various strands of Christian Gnosticism. If you want a quick refresher on Gnosticism, you may find these two posts from a couple of years ago interesting. Here the online blog has two links. Gnostic Christians developed elaborate mythologies that traced the genealogies of divine beings all the way back to the one true God. Some strands of Gnosticism were deeply rooted in Judaism. The Jewish scriptures themselves, especially the first chapters of Genesis, proved to be a limitless resource for speculation about how the world and the supernatural beings who rule it came into existence. It is striking in this connection that the author of 1 Timothy goes on to attack those who want to be, quote, teachers of the law, unquote, 1:7. Most of the later Gnostic groups we know about were rigorously ascetic. Wanting to escape the material world, they chose to punish their bodies so as not to be enslaved by them, refraining from sexual relations, and insisting on strict and uninteresting diets. The author of 1 Timothy correspondingly lambastes false teachers because they, quote, forbid marriage and demand abstinence from foods, unquote, 4:3. Moreover, he concludes his letter with a final exhortation to, quote, avoid the profane chatter and contradictions of what is falsely called knowledge, unquote, 6:20. The Greek word for knowledge, of course, is gnosis. Those who were Gnostics claimed to know what was not available to the general public, not even to their fellow Christians. It seems altogether reasonable, then, to assume that this letter was directed against an early set of religious practices that was similar in key ways to what would later develop into some kind of Christian Gnosticism. The author does not attack the views of his opponents head-on, but instead urges Timothy not to heed their words, and, if possible, to bring them into submission. 1 Timothy 1:3. As we will see later, many of the instructions that the author gives to the leadership of the church may represent an effort to become organized to face the opponents with a unified front. In any event, the qualifications of those who are to be appointed leaders of the church, the bishops and the deacons, whose duties are never spelled out, soon take center stage. For this author, only men are allowed to occupy these positions, and they are to be morally upright and strong personalities who can serve as models to the community and command respect in the world outside the church. The tight organization of the church is important not only for addressing the problems posed by false teachers, but also for monitoring the inner workings of the community itself. In particular, the author is concerned about the role women should play in the congregation. Not much of one. See especially 1 Timothy 2:11 through 15, and about the position and activities of widows, who appear to be enrolled by the church and provided with some kind of material support in exchange for their pious deeds. Chapter 5, 4 through 16. The author evidently thinks that women in general, and widows in particular, have stirred up problems and are not to be trusted. For example, chapter 5, 11 through 13. I will continue in my next post by summarizing the books of 2 Timothy and Titus.